You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The biggest heavyweight title fight in UFC history goes down tomorrow night in Las Vegas, and it will be the final time we see one of the very best make the walk to the hallowed octagon. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the UFC 252 preview show here on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Hack. That is Jose Youngs. Jose, we're here. We've arrived. Stipe Miocic versus Daniel Cormier 3, the trilogy fight for the heavyweight championship. Both guys have a finish over the other. The stakes are about as high as you can get for a heavyweight title fight. Does it get any better than this, my man?
In terms of the athletic competition that we're about to see inside the octagon, no. And especially in terms of heavyweights. I think I said this on the Between the Links. There's just something missing with like the buildup and the promotion of this fight. It might be the lack of fans. It might be because we haven't had these guys in the same room just jawing at each other, squaring off until yesterday. Which was the pre-fight press conference. And it was a little special because it was the first press conference we've had since the pandemic really hit. But in terms of looking at their abilities inside the octagon, this is as good as it gets. It's the best heavyweight fight, I think, besides their first two. It's like the best rivalry we've had, obviously, since Kane versus JDS. I think the third fight of that felt a little bigger, and I think it's because all the media that went into it and the fact that I explained this all in Between the Links, like they really built that up as opposed to this, which is once a year, and this is the third fight in a row Stipe is fighting Daniel Cormier. We didn't really get any palate cleansers in between fights, but yeah, in terms of the actual fight, everything about this just screams just high-level violent martial art competition.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're in different times now with the pandemic and everything, but I agree. You know, when you put these two guys, the lineage they have, the careers they've had, one of these guys is competing for the final time. The other guy is, you know, not saying he's retiring, but he's thinking about it a lot more, at least. This is just checks off all the boxes for me. But like you mentioned, the press conference yesterday was very respectful between these guys. And I thought it was interesting when both were asked about sort of utilizing things that made them successful during this rivalry in careers. You know, DC with this wrestling saying, I don't want to wrestle him, I want to fight him. And then Stipe saying, essentially, I might not go to the body this time. Who really knows? That's one of the things that makes this fight so fascinating, because both these guys have so many different things they could do to be successful. Do you believe either of these guys when they say these things?
No, Daniel Cormier himself said after their last fight, I abandoned the wrestling. I mean, I was there. Bob Cook was screaming at Daniel Cormier to shoot him for the takedown. He wasn't. He goes, I just abandoned the wrestling, and that was my downfall. Stipe was like, maybe. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe I'll go to the body. And Daniel Cormier answered for him. He goes, of course he's going to the body. He would be stupid not to. So it is an MMA fight. Maybe Stipe doesn't have to go to the body, because let's not forget, he didn't enter that fight thinking, oh, I'm going to work DC's body and then go and get the finish. That was a transition and a game change in the middle of the fight. And DC said that in the press conference, you only get one of those. You only get one adjustment. You made it. I know the holes I need to clean up. So maybe he'll look to go to the body. It might not be there this time. And if it's not there, maybe he can't rely on it. Maybe DC will try to wrestle and Stipe won't let him. So it's a matter of who can implement their game plan first and continue it. Because like we had Dean Thomas on, it's not who the fighter with the skill set is that normally wins. It's the fighter that it's the first fighter to make a mistake and the first fighter to capitalize on that mistake that usually wins the fight. So if Stipe Miocic, say, leaves himself open like he did in the first fight and DC takes advantage of it, could be a quick night. If Stipe can't stop the takedown and gets worn out, it's going to be a long night. He might lose, but if DC shores up his defense in the midsection and Stipe finds another hole, say his legs, his chin, something else, then it could be another story. But to say they're not going to wrestle and they're not going to go to the body, that's a little ridiculous. They might not rely on it as heavily, but come on, it's a fight. They're gonna go for wherever. Like, you think DC's gonna be like, oh, I guess I won three rounds, I'm just gonna strike with Stipe the whole time? No, he's gonna fight whatever. The W's the most important. Whatever gets in the W is what he's gonna do.
Just thinking about DC making the walk for the final time, it's kind of surreal. Some people think he's gonna stick around maybe for a third fight with John Jones at heavyweight. I am not one of those people. I completely believe him when he says this is the final time he'll be fighting, because his professional career, this isn't even the best of it. He's got bigger things to come when it comes to his life, his career, and what's ahead of him. we'll get into your pick and all that in a moment. But, you know, when you think of DC, his career, all he's accomplished, you know, what are some of the things that you look back on this week that you reflect on? Is there like a story, a conversation, you know, as he heads into the swan song? Like, what do you remember about DC the Fighter?
I remember vividly watching, because when he won the Strikeforce Grand Prix over Josh Barnett, he was like a fill-in. He wasn't even like, he was like an alternate that like got thrown into the Grand Prix. And I remember the first time I ever really remembered DC, I think he was Josh Koscheck's coach on The Ultimate Fighter opposite GSP. Like, he was in that yellow tank top, and then all of a sudden he's in Strikeforce. He's building his way up. And none of my friends wanted to watch the Strikeforce Grand Prix with me. So I pretty much watched DC versus Josh Barnett on my tiny iPhone 3. That's where I watched that fight. So I remember him winning that. I remember him making a big splash in the UFC. In terms of my actual like interactions with him, I've told you this story. I interviewed him once before his Vulcan fight in New York City. It was when Fox Sports set it up, and DC, this is right when John Jones was in the middle of his whole suspension thing, and DC was the champion gearing up to fight Volkan Ozdemir. And he compared John Jones to Michael Jordan, and Michael Jordan went away for 2 years, and Hakeem Olajuwon came in and won the championship. And he referred to himself as the Hakeem Olajuwon of MMA. You're probably wondering, wow, that sounds like a great interview. How come I've never seen that? It's because the file got corrupted. It was an accidental bump from a waiter at the restaurant I was editing in, and that interview never saw the light of day. So it might be my favorite interview ever, and no one saw it, and I never saw the footage outside of my fond memories of that interview. But DC has always been very forthcoming with his time. He's been very great to interview. Like, even young guys, he's very patient with. Like, he speaks on your level. You can ask him a bad question, and he'll still answer it honestly. You can ask him a great question, he'll give you the exact same excitement. So I will miss DC, the fighter, but I will also miss DC as a person that was just, he was so interesting to cover as a human being. So and he has a great backstory, the wrestling and his rise to the top. So if this is indeed the last time, which I think it is, the sport will miss him for sure, competing. And media days, press conferences, all that stuff.
Luckily, he'll be sticking around the sport, yes, doing commentary and talking about the sport, which is great. And I can't wait to see like which nationally syndicated morning show picks him up to be a co-host, because it's definitely going to happen. But for Stipe, look, I tend to think he's playing with house money here. Like, if he wins, he defends the title against Francis Ngannou or whoever. If he loses, I'm not 100% certain on this or am convinced about this, but I would say he has a very, very good chance of being one half of the vacant title fight when they decide to put that together. Do you tend to believe that theory as well? And if so, will that affect Stipe Miocic's approach tomorrow night?
I don't think it's going to affect his approach at all, because I think Stipe is very much like, I'm going to win. He said it to our own Damon Martin. He goes, this is going to determine who the greatest heavyweight of all time is. Too bad it has to be me. Sorry, DC. So, like, he is that confident that he's going to go down as the greatest heavyweight champion ever. I don't think he's even entertaining the idea that he's going to lose. Like, yes, it's a possibility, but he's so focused that and strong-willed that he knows he's going to win. I don't think he's thinking past Daniel Cormier. But I do think that win or lose, he will be fighting Francis Ngannou next. It's just a matter of whether it's for a vacant title or if he's defending the title. Maybe it might not be in 2020, it might be early 2021. But I think Francis has done more than enough to earn the title shot. If not, like, I can't imagine, like, if he wants to keep fighting, great. I think it'd be foolish to risk his number one contender spot. And Stipe versus him is a rematch, which I'm sure the UFC wouldn't hate, because I know the UFC really, really built up Francis in their first fight. And Stipe, like you said, it's the relationship between the UFC and Stipe has gotten a lot better since that night. He did not want to be there. After all, like, Dana White basically championing Francis Ngannou the entire buildup. So if he doesn't want that fight, I get it. But Derek Lewis is there, Curtis Blaydes is there, and Ngannou's there. There's a lot of good heavyweights. I still think Curtis Blaydes should fight Derek Lewis, and Francis Ngannou should fight Stipe. They can fight on the same card for all I care, but I think those are the two fights that will happen next after tomorrow night.
And then there's the John Jones factor in there. You can't forget about him. Wild card city.
I think the UFC is much more interested in Israel Adesanya versus John Jones at light heavyweight in 2021. Because that, to me, like, we've seen the DC fight twice. Yes, DC is a heavyweight now, but he's on the wrong side of 40. He's no longer a spring chicken. I really think they want the, but again, Dana White says if John Jones wants to fight a light heavyweight again, he's got to fight Dominic Reyes. So I want to see that fight before anything, right? Because I was in Houston, and I think Casey was in Houston. A lot of people think Dominic Reyes won. I think that is a big question mark on John Jones' career. If he beats Dominic Reyes handedly, maybe, but I think the UFC wants Jones Adesanya in the future, and over a third fight between Jones and DC.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see Jones versus DC, but if Jones wants to fight Ngannou or Jones wants to fight Stipe, if the UFC, let's say DC wins and there's a vacant title and John Jones says, whatever, let's get it done, that could happen. So
if it happens, I don't want it to be for, if John Jones does go to heavyweight, it's not, I don't want it to be a non-title fight. I want it to be for a vacant title, or if he's challenging Stipe or DC, whoever. I don't want John to just go up against Francis for a random headliner. I don't want that. He's got to fight for a title.
Completely agree. I mean, tomorrow night, though, massive, massive heavyweight title fight. Checks all the boxes in every way. So million-dollar question, Jose. Who leaves the UFC Apex with gold wrapped around their waist?
Wow. I'm making my mind up now. I lean Stipe. I think Stipe is just, whenever there's a fight that's so close in my mind, like if I can't make up my mind, I always tend to favor the champion. He is the champion. He's coming in. He's coming off the big win in his last fight. If anyone can make adjustments going into a rematch, it's Daniel Cormier. But I think Stipe wins. I think it'll be a stoppage. I think he's going to catch DC. I think DC's going to look phenomenal. I think Stipe's going to look phenomenal. I don't think it's going to be one-sided at all. I think it's going to be like any heavyweight knockout. It's going to be competitive until someone gets caught. And I just think Stipe is going to catch Daniel Cormier. I could be wrong. There's a high possibility I could be wrong. That's how close this. I usually say 51-49. This is 50-50. In my mind, this is 50-50. And I, in my head, flipped a coin and it landed heads on Stipe. So that's what I'm picking.
Yeah, I flipped the same coin, just happened to land on tails for DC. So it's just such a good fight. It's so hard to pick. But
and I am in agreement. I know Cain Velasquez out there. I know Fedor's out there. The winner of this should be the greatest heavyweight ever.
I would agree with that as well. I mean, I understand the Fedor argument, but, you know, let's, from start to finish, it's got to be one of these two guys. We've seen what Fedor's done. He's had some losses, some bad losses. You know, and these guys are still plugging along.
If you want to argue Fedor, Cain, fine. Like, you're not wrong either. It's one. It's any of those four that we just named. Like, what's the loser? This the great second greatest, and then what? Cain, Fedor's 3-4. Like, it's not a bad list of people to be involved with.
100%. Co-main event. This one is not flying under the radar at all, especially considering what the main event entails and what is at stake there. But we got Sean O'Malley, one of the rising stars in our sport, coming off two quick finishes in 2020. The most recent one was that nasty KO of Eddie Wineland at UFC 250. He is back to take on Marlon Chito Vera. Biggest test of Sugar Sean's career, undoubtedly. Absolutely stupendous matchmaking, Jose. Absolute stupendous card placement for this one. What sticks out to you at 135 pounds in this co-main event?
I mean, it's the perfect fight. Marlon Vera is it checks all the boxes. They're both very charismatic. They both are incredibly exciting fighters. They're both in the prime of their careers. This has the makings of, it could be one of those things, like it's a double bonus. The winner of this could get fight of the night and a performance bonus. That is what I'm looking at. This, like, Sugar Sean O'Malley is the man right now in the eyes of the UFC. He really has that air of greatness, like Conor, or when Adesanya made the rise, or like these fighters that from the jump, they were earmarked as future contenders, future superstars, like crossover global icons. And standing opposite him is a guy that doesn't care about any of that. Like, he doesn't care if you're Sugar Sean O'Malley, the flavor of the month, as people like to say, or you're the 1,000th ranked bantamweight. This dude just wants to throw down a Marlon Vera, Ecuadorian. He says he just likes to fight. He doesn't need any other motivation because he has a bunch of kids. He's married. He goes, that's my motivation. This is fun to me. I'll talk crap if I want to, but I don't have to. Sometimes I just want to really fight. They've been booked before. They're very respectful, honestly, because when they were originally supposed to fight and Sugar Sean got that tainted supplement, Marlon Vera was very understanding. He's like, hey, man, next time you take something, just call the UFC. Like, he was giving them advice. I'm sure you saw that embedded, where Marlon Vera was giving Sean O'Malley advice on how to deal with USADA and supplements and the UFC and everything. So there's no bad blood here. This is just an awesome fight. It checks, like I said, all the boxes. Cody and Marlon, whoever wins this is going to be a big deal going forward. I favor Sean O'Malley. I think I'm probably going to pick him. I don't know how, but Sugar Sean has not looked, outside of hurting himself against Andrei Sukumtov, hasn't looked really broken a sweat in recent fights. The Jose Quinones fight, the Eddie Weiland fight, war. Highlight reel stoppages. I mean, we're talking like if Cody Garbrandt doesn't starch Rafael Dos Santos on that same card, Sean O'Malley probably has the best knockout of the Apex era, I would say. It's between those two, in my opinion. So I wish that fight was going to happen in the future, but that's another conversation. But this fight is the, quote, people's main event. I don't have an issue with it being called that. I have a feeling that the winner lose, we could see this fight even again down the road, maybe five rounds if they continue to rattle off some wins. Because, like, remember when Conor fought this young 20-year-old Hawaiian named Max Holloway? This kind of has that feeling. I know Marlon Vera's been around for a while, but the flip side, this could be Conor McGregor Poirier part two, where Conor just ran in there and starched Poirier, and then they both went on to have great careers. But that's really where the skyrocket that Conor grabbed and took. Yes, the Dublin card was great, but then he crushed Poirier. He was a big name. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but I favor Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, I've said this a few times about this fight. And, you know, every different iteration I've had the opportunity to do so. The longer this fight goes, the more it favors Marlon Vera. Yeah. Marlon Vera is like the Greg the Hammer Valentine of this fight. Just bring him into deep water. That's where he thrives. He tastes that blood and he gets stronger. I'm not saying Sean O'Malley doesn't have excellent cardio and he's not in terrific shape, because he is. But Cheeto's just a dog. He loves getting in these situations. It's when he's at his best. You would think Sean knows that, being who Sean O'Malley is, very intelligent guy, studies the game and is a fan of the sport. So he probably knows that Marlon gets better as the fight goes on. And Marlon probably knows that Sean knows that, if that makes any sense. But you have to feel like Vera's being slept on here, considering the amount of attention O'Malley has been getting and continues to get, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was at his last fight against Song Yadong. I had him winning that fight. Actually, a lot of people think Marlon Vera beat Song Yadong in Jacksonville. And if he had won that, well, that's a 6-fight win streak. And they're when I say it's a win streak, none of them were decisions. They were TKOs and submissions. So this guy isn't going out there and squeaking out wins. Like, he's going out there and putting a beat down on his opponents. The thing that I think tips it for me with Sean O'Malley is we haven't really seen his grappling. He is a phenomenal jiu-jitsu practitioner. He is unbelievable. Like, you're saying people are sleeping on Marlon Vera's abilities. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Sugar Sean's grappling ability. I think he himself says his favorite sport is not MMA. It's jiu-jitsu. But he understands knockouts are what people want to see, and so that's what he goes for. If Marlon Vera gets in trouble and gets hurt and he takes it down, you're not safe. I think Sean O'Malley can tap anyone and he can knock out anyone. I think, unlike Conor, where he was so dangerous on the ground and he could get it done so dangerous on his feet and he could get it done on the ground, I think Sean could be better grappler than striker. He just happens to be a phenomenal striker. We just haven't seen it. So I know he has that piston left hand, right, or in that uppercut, but I've seen him in quintet. The only person that got him out of there early was Hector Lombard, who dropped down for a leg lock. And when I was under the pressure, there were no leg locks in quintet. So then also Hector Lombard weighed about 250 pounds in there. And Sugar Sean was like, I don't know, 160. So I'll give him a pass on that. So yeah, I think Sean O'Malley's grappling, and we haven't really seen it on embedded either. We saw a lot of striking, a lot of hitting pads. Didn't see a lot of grappling. So I think it could be a raw. Marlon's, everything you said about Marlon's true. It gets out of the second round, it's anyone's game. But those first 10 minutes, you have to survive against Sean O'Malley.
Yeah, I think it's probably closer to like the first 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like midway through the second round, if this fight's still happening, I'm going to be, you know, buckling the old proverbial seatbelt here. Sure.
O'Malley has unbelievable cardio too. Like, I've interviewed him enough times on the Arizona scene that he's like, he loves like training cardio. Like, he goes, because movement is such a big part of his game that he knows that his cardio needs to be on point. He's not a stagnant fighter. He fights I'm not comparing Dillashaw and Cruz and their abilities, but they're always moving, like O'Malley. O'Malley's always on the move, circling, in and out, darting up and down. He's not stagnant. So his cardio is, I'm not even calling it underrated. It's unbelievable. So I think I still favor O'Malley, but Marlon, you got to put away Marlon Vera before the third round if you have any hopes of securing a definitive win.
Yeah, I mean, even putting him away
It's not. I don't think it's been done.
It's huge. Yeah, it's been a nothing that I can remember off the top of my head. But that's a great fight. I am leaning towards O'Malley early on, anyways. If it gets past that point, I'm not saying O'Malley can't get his hand raised, but it does make things pretty interesting. But the main card as a whole is really, really good. We got Junior Dos Santos against Jairzinho Rozenstruik in the featured spot. Herbert Burns, who missed weight by 3.5 pounds, takes on the returning Daniel Pineda. What a story that is. Back in the octagon for the first time in over 6 years. John Dodson versus Barab Dawalish Willie is awesome at 135 pounds. But you know where this is heading, Jose. It is under the radar time. Time to shine some light, give some love to that fight or fights that just aren't getting enough of it. What is your under the radar storyline, under the radar fight heading into tomorrow night?
I think there's two, and they're both in the same weight class. It's the two women's strawweight fights. The Felice Herrig versus Verna fight is unbelievable. Verna's former Invicta champion, and she's the dark horse of this division. The only one she's really lost to in recent memory is, off the top of my head, is Carla Esparza. And she didn't look terrible in that fight. Like, Verna is unlike what? Her record is great. It's like, I think she has one, maybe two losses. I can only remember the Carla Esparza off the top of my head. And the Felice Herrig has fought a who's who of women's MMA competition. Like, if you look at who they've matched her up with, it's like the Paige Van Zandt, the Alexa Grassos. I think she was supposed to fight Jean Nan, I think is how you pronounce her name, on that Chicago card, but then she got hurt. So they really do use her as like a barometer of where these high level prospects are. And I'm not even calling Verna a prospect. Like, this is just a good stepping stone for Verna and Felice. She's coming off really bad knee surgery, but she still deserves a big name because she is a big name. So this is a great fight. And then Ashley Yoder versus Livia Hinata Souza. This fight could be real violent and real bloody and real sloppy because they could just be throwing leather, cutting each other up, bruising each other up. Might not be the most technical fight, but it's going to be real hard to put the other one away. Livia Hinata Souza is who I consider a female BMF. She's a terrifying individual. If you haven't read it already, go read Guillermo Cruz's interview with her. She promises to haunt certain fighters' dreams. I won't give it away because I want you to go read it. And Ashley Yoder, the spider monkey. She's fought in Mackenzie Dern. She's fought these big cards. She fought in the 25th anniversary card up in Denver with no corner. Keep in mind, Rose Namajunas and Pat Barry basically met her there and were like, yeah, we'll corner you. So she fought, like, I think it was Amanda Cooper with no corner. Like, she got her corner like that week. So she's always down to scrap. So I think the two women's strawweight fights are, I'm not even calling them under the radar. Like, those two I do have circled as fights you need to pay attention to.
Yeah, I don't even have very much to add to that. Ashley Yoder, I interviewed her a couple of weeks ago, which you can find on the site. If they say MMA is a game of inches, and Ashley Yoder is like the definition of that. Because I thought I covered that her first fight against Justine Kish. Definitely not Ashley Yoder won that fight. Yep. The Dern fight was really close. The Hill fight was close. The Cooper one was super close. And the Rena Marcos one was really close. Like, she's had like all split decisions or like controversial decisions throughout her entire run.
She's basically the Dennis Bermudez of women's strawweights, where you just rattle off like you're beating Jeremy Stevens, and then you can just get caught with a flying knee at the end, and then you rattle off, you lose a bunch of narrow split decisions. So Ashley Yoder could be on like a 5-5 win streak, but instead she's lost like she's like 2-4 or something like that in the last few fights. So yeah, those two fights really stand out to me.
She has a 30-24 win under her belt.
But then
no finishes in the UFC, but she got a 30-24. That is insane.
On the flip side, I actually think she lost to Amanda Cooper on that Denver card. Like, that was a really close fight too. So even in wins, it's that close.
Yeah, Amanda Cooper feels the same way. Trust me, all this time later. But I love that fight between Yoder and Souza. They're just going to beat the snot out of each other. And then, Felice Herrig's return is just a story in itself. I feel like her mind is in the best place it's been in a long time. It's been almost 2 years since we've seen her, since the torn ACL. And Verna's got a little bit of momentum herself. She's 15-1. She's coming off that submission win over Mallory Martin. And the only loss in her career was to Herrig's really good friend, Carla Esparza. So this is the chance to get that one back in a weird way. But very interesting fight, and probably, in my opinion, the funnest division in possibly all of MMA, definitely the most loaded division in the UFC in terms of women's fighting. But tomorrow night, it all goes down. UFC 252 at the UFC Apex in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Our man, the producer extraordinaire, Casey Lydon, is in Las Vegas. And we're going to have you covered before, during, and after the event with just coverage galore, interacting with all of you guys. It's going to be a huge night for MMA fans around the world with the heavyweight championship on the line. That's it. We are done. UFC 252 preview show in the books on MMAfighting.com. For Jose Youngs, I am Mike Heck. Buckle up. We'll see you tomorrow night.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.